You're nicely on time.
Okay. Welcome everybody to my talk, Bridging the Gap from WordPress to Replate. As always, a few words about myself first. My name is Niklas. I'm technical lead at Aluga.com, which is a multilingual video platform and dubbing tool suite. I personally consider myself a Rustation and Nix enthusiast, so this topic might seem a bit out of place from my usual conference topics. I do like computer graphics and interactive media, pen and paper role-playing games. Actually, what I missed here for this room, I do like natural languages, so I'm fluent in English. Meine Muttersprache ist Deutsch. Hablo español, pero no hay demasiado oportunidades de practicarlo. Y je peux parler français, petit. So you can find me on the web at quartz.dev, and I'm also on the Fediverse on niklasquartz@rheinecker.social, where I'm also personally one of the admins that is running this instance. And now that we have covered that part, also this is my first FOSDEM, and as of a few moments ago, my first time helping out with a dev room. Thanks for Tom for taking over DAV so I can close this tab. So what to expect from this talk? This is not a mature open source project that you can like grab and throw at your WordPress instance and then have it become multilingual. It's mostly about sharing a fun little story, a bit of hacker spirit, how I solved translations for our own WordPress-powered marketing and product pages. And yeah, it involves three free and open source projects, WordPress Elementor, which is based on WordPress, and Replate. We'll start with the motivation for this project, then we'll talk a bit about what the initial idea was and at what solution we arrived eventually, how I implemented it, and what conclusions I derived from having finished this project in roughly the past 1.5 years, which was not like full-time job, but here and then adjusting it and hacking on it. So first of all, why WordPress for our product marketing pages at all? Initially, like our company existed for the past 12 years at this point, and for most of the time we were fine implementing our whole marketing product pages directly as a collaboration between marketing and designers and developers. But as we all of us probably know, development time is expensive, so needing this feedback loop back and forth between marketing, designers, and developers takes a lot of time that we'd like to spend on our core product itself. So we decided 2 years ago that we would move this process to WordPress because our marketing team was familiar with it already, our new designer was familiar with it already, and yeah, they can just like adjust it, edit text, add text, redact text without involving the development team. I'd like to note that this decision was made before the whole WordPress versus WP engine thing 1.5 years ago. So I'm not here to say use WordPress for everything, I'm just saying it worked out for us, it's still working out for us. If you know a better solution, then just go with it. No hard feelings. Why Replate? There are, of course, existing WordPress plugins to do localization, internationalization to WordPress CMS pages, namely WPML, Polylang, and gTranslate. And we did try them out, but the whole workflow felt unfamiliar to our in-house translators and our freelancers, who are much more used to Replate already because we're using it for our product translations. So the onboarding like for Replate was unnecessary, while we would have to like give more to each of our translators, give more teaching. How do you properly use this tool? Are you kept in the loop when new translations are required? Whereas Replate, they just open our Replate instance and already knew, okay, these are the strings I have to translate. Nice, or check, or edit, whatever. Also, Replate has everything in one place, like it allows us to easily take existing translations we had already for new similar strings through translation memory. You can define a glossary, which is really nice. And also, of course, it integrates with automated translation APIs, so we can like have an initial automated translation and then go over to the translators in our hearts, so you can see these are the translations that were automatically generated, check them for correctness, precision, whatever. Okay, so of course the final target is to get every translatable string on our CMS pages into the WordPress into the Replate instance. How do you do that? Like, we have quite a bit of text, like marketing people like to talk, and that's a lot of stuff to translate. And also, as opposed to UI translation, where most of the time you can just say, I have one string that interpolates values. Marketing people always reinvent the whole text, so you basically have to translate it completely anew. Now, Weblate can translate a lot of formats. In our case, it's not the WordPress database. You can just plug into Weblate, so you need to find an intermediary format. And for most of the time when you're having like an automated pipeline, JSON is the ideal format for that, and Weblate can handle JSON just fine. So that means we need to get JSON message files out of our WordPress instance so we can feed them into Weblate. How do you do that? Roughly speaking, we said, okay, we want one content block in the page to equal one string in our JSON file, so one message in our Weblate instance. That's a bit much of generalization, so some block types can have multiple strings, like lists can have a string for each list item, or also if you have like mixed content, if there's some other HTML that's a bit more complex in between, then also you might have multiple strings for a single widget type. But that's, at this point, an implementation detail. Then from Weblate, we can, again, export JSON and have that to feed that back into our pipeline and somehow have to get that into the WordPress page again to like serve the localized version. So in-house, we don't have much experience with PHP or WordPress plugins. It's not zero experience, but it's enough that we have said, okay, we're not going to develop this as a WordPress plugin. But I personally have a lot of experience with static page builders, and this is not much else than a static page builder, except that you don't take Markdown or like an SQLite database as input, but a WordPress HTML page. I will briefly mention why we didn't go with the WordPress REST API in a moment. Now, the problem is, if you want to have like one message per content type or content block inside the page, you need to be able to uniquely identify the content blocks of the pages. Like you need a message identifier that the JSON and then Weblate can use to say this is the same message when it changed in the original language and then potentially has to be adjusted in the target language. Unfortunately, the go-to solution for WordPress, which is the Gutenberg editor, does not have stable unique IDs. You can check out these two issues if you want to see a very lengthy discussion about that. And also, you will unfortunately arrive at the conclusion that unique stable IDs will never come for Gutenberg blocks. That was very sad for me. So what can you do instead? You could implement custom block types and then say, okay, this is an attribute on my custom block that is just for the message ID, and then have your marketing or designers insert the message identifier or like generate a random one so it's stored inside the block and remains stable. But that's problematic if you're copying the pages, which our marketing people are doing a lot because they don't want to start from scratch, right? They have like a template and then it looks somewhat familiar for all product pages and then they just replace some blocks, edit some details, etc. And then you need different message identifiers for the blocks where they change the entire text. Also, you can't do the same for like built-in blocks of Gutenberg, which means you can't, like, you have to reinvent the wheel if you want to go down this path. So we said, okay, what else could we do? We could just say what's the one thing that stays stable for message, it's the hash of it. We didn't stay at this, but for a moment that seemed like the only solution we got, like take the SHA-256 hash of the message and then use that as identifier in Weblate. But that comes with the downside that whenever this text is edited, that's considered a complete new message inside Weblate. Now, translation memory makes this somewhat okay because maybe Weblate is able to still say, okay, someone fixed the typo in the original English text, but this is still the translation that should be assigned to this message. But at this point, another thing came up that our designer was a lot more comfortable with the Elementor website builder. Elementor is, theoretically speaking, also practically speaking, free and open source software. It's like on GitHub, you can get it under the GPL v3. They have a pro version, but of course, GPL and commercial software do not necessarily cancel each other out. Like you can get a license and then you're free to do with the code whatever you want. They're just not going to put a pro version source code themselves on their website to download without buying it. Now, Elementor widgets, which they call their block like equivalent, their Gutenberg block equivalent, do have stable IDs, and that made localization of these pages a lot easier. And also you can attach custom data, like they have inside the Elementor website builder, they have a section for dataset attributes, and if you've ever coded plain HTML, you might know the data dash attributes where you can like assign whatever name you want and put in whatever value you want and then do with that what you want. So a bit more about how do these identifiers for blocks look like. This is like one part of our landing page. So we have like four text widgets on here, as you can see, that we want to translate. More namely, we have a headline, and we have something called a text editor widget below it. And if we look at the HTML source code of that, we can see they also expose these things directly on the HTML you get from WordPress as dataset attributes. So we have this div, like every Elementor widget is wrapped in a div for the widget itself. Now for semantic HTML, that might hurt a bit of purists, but for our case it was completely fine. So we can get the ID from this widget, we can see what the widget type is, and now if we want to search for everything on the page that's translatable, we first pass the HTML, get all the elements that have this element type widget, and then filter for widget types we want to translate. Of course, the localized part, like the part we want to replace and translate, is not directly the element itself, so we still have to do a bit of descent until we hit the text node to translate, but it will say a bit more about that in a moment in the implementation part. So how did we implement this? Originally, we implemented this as an on-the-fly server in Rust because we said, well, maybe people aren't accessing specific pages, and even then we can just cache them on the fly. But eventually we recognized, okay, we're updating the implementation to work around certain Elementor issues much more than we're changing the pages themselves. So it was easier to say we go with TypeScript, so we can easily exchange the details of this pipeline and then run this as a CI pipeline whenever the pages were updated, and then deploy that to our web space, have a CDN in front, etc. Still, this is relying a lot on the Rust ecosystem because we're using Dino, we're using the HTML parsers, the CSS parsers from the server project, and yeah, that made things a lot easier. I already mentioned we have a fixed list of translatable widget types. I will show actually what that means. So if I go, this is the source code. I'm planning to, as I will mention at the end, planning to upload a more generalized version of it. I didn't get to it before first time, unfortunately. I'm sorry. But very up here, we have like a list of translatable widgets. So headings that are any kind of headlines, level 1, 2, 3, we want to translate. That text blocks, which is mostly paragraphs, but not only paragraphs, we want to translate that. There are also some buttons we have to translate. Those are a bit odd because they have a very convoluted content path, so that has some special handling. But overall, that worked out well enough. Okay, so the pipeline itself starts with some pre-processing, like we have to rewrite the URLs for where we're deploying it, download the assets from WordPress, maybe minify the CSS and also adjust the CSS a bit, as I will show on the next slide. We want to extract the messages from the WordPress site, so we can generate a JSON file for WebLate. We want to translate it inside WebLate, so that's the part where a bit of automated translation followed by human quality checks comes in, and then we want to export it again from WebLate to JSON and feed that into our pipeline to generate the final localized version of it. For the pre-processing, there are some things that are very specific to our setup, so they are not particularly interesting for localization itself. For example, we don't want to just pull in the whole WordPress page and then serve that to the end user because we're integrating that into our larger page. So that means in particular, we have this page, that's what it looks like on our WordPress instance, like that doesn't have much around it. We're stripping footers, headers, etc., because our website itself already has that. Then we're feeding that into WebLate. This is, for example, the strings we have for this web page. So that's every text you see on this page, basically, is included in our WebLate instance to edit, quality check, etc. And then we end up with this on our actual website. So that's like a React shell, and in between we're embedding the static HTML that was output for our page here for the German local. We're also removing all JavaScript from the website. We're currently not allowing the marketing pages to embed scripts because they would be able to access the cookies of our main product. That's still a bit of an issue for us where we are considering to actually split marketing from the actual product on different domains. Anyone who knows like host name separation for cookies probably has run into this before. And what we're also doing is we're wrapping all the CSS in an additional ruler. So an additional rule. So for example, if something changes the font rate for any heading line, we won't don't want to have that affect the rest of our product, right? Now, what we do, how we're doing that is through a package called Lightning CSS. That's based on also the Rust Servo CSS parser that I mentioned before. That allows you to transform basically any rule you have in a CSS style sheet. That's very neat if you do custom, like if you have custom things you want to do to your CSS. And finally, we're hashing all the files we download from WordPress and then append the content hash to the file names. I know there are WordPress plugins that can do that like directly inside WordPress, but at this point, we already had our custom pipeline from start to end, and we're like, okay, we do download the files, we can just hash them and append them. There's no need to involve additional PHP plugins in this process that potentially slow down the rest of it. Okay, so how do we extract messages? I already mentioned that we're using Servo's HTML parser for that. That's neatly wrapped in a package called Dino DOM, but there are also NPM packages and also other programming language packages that can access the same parser and allow you to efficiently parse and search through an HTML DOM tree. We are looking for the elemental widgets inside the DOM tree. I showed you this data type widget, which we can just scan for. There are also, like, if you know Beautiful Soup for Python, there are similar packages for Dino and NPM where you can just insert a CSS selector, get all the elements that match the selector, and then work on them. Then we're checking if that type is translatable. If yes, we proceed. Then we curse into this widget until we hit the translatable parts. At that point, I want to note that not only text nodes are translatable, like text nodes are the part that are like in the very end of your DOM tree that the actual text content is contained in. You also have to translate things like alt attributes and titles and labels. So you need some special casing, of course, for these. And for the things where widgets are not sufficient or we can't detect the actual text content inside of the page, we have a fallback where we just assign a dataset attribute with a custom message identifier. So that's like the really last resort if we see during testing, A, this message didn't end up in Replate. Why is that? We look into it, assign the custom message identifier, and then we're done with it. Now that we've extracted the JSON file, I actually will show what that looks like. This is what we get from our pipeline for the page we had just now. So that's showing the page slug, then the widget type, and the unique ID that Elementor has assigned internally. And then we're just passing that to Replate, which we saw here, and can edit them in Replate, yeah. So now we are done with the automated translations. Our team has looked over the messages, done some corrections to say, this is fine, we can deploy this. We need to somehow feed these messages back into our WordPress pipeline. That has to use the same algorithm to like detect what content nodes should be translated, because you need to, of course, you need to replace the same node, like the same text nodes with the same ID, the same message that's assigned to that ID, or the same alt attribute, etc. So that's all happening in one pass. And then we get the translations from the JSON and insert them in the position of the node we want to replace. We're doing that, questions at the end, yes? But
does it also involve placeholders and loaders at this point when you extract the text? Or
does it involve placeholders? You mean like the placeholder attribute? That's what I meant with special handling. So for example, alt attributes, label attributes, etc. That's like, that needs some special rules to say this type, like input types have placeholders or title attributes can be on any element. That's, title attributes is something we don't handle at the moment, but for example, alt attributes on images is something that we'd like just add with a special message identifier into the JSON, yeah. I will have to think about that at the end, or speak in private, yeah. Also, we realized we need some inline HTML. For example, some languages don't like italized text, I think, right? Cursive text. In Arabic, you don't do that usually, but like the main English version, the reference version, had this cursive text. And then the translator can say, okay, this has a B tag, I removed that from the translation, but other translations might want to keep that. Or also something we realized is like we originally tried to split the strings at the boundaries of like the HTML elements, and then we had like text node, bold text, text node. that of course assumes that you have the same order of these words in the translation, which is not the case. So you might like start with the bold text and the rest is the normal text. So instead we said, okay, formatting should be allowed inside the messages. We take that as one thing and then we sanitize the messages we get back from WebLite to allow only formatting and also in some cases anchor links, because you might want to link to a different version of a page depending on the local you translate to. So that already lets us arrive at the conclusion. My conclusion from this project is if it's HTML, you can translate it. It really mostly doesn't matter where you got that HTML from. And if it generates and consumes a map of messages, you can use WebLate. You just like need to get from that step one to step two. Ideally, you have text-only nodes and you know how to stably and uniquely identify them. The next best thing is you know how to reliably find and replace the text inside these nodes. That's basically what we had to do in the end. And if you don't have a stable ID, you could fall back to the idea of hashing the original message, but it's not ideal, so maybe try to find something that uniquely and stably identifies the text first. Also, source code I mentioned, I didn't manage to like get a cleaned up version of it up and running on Codeberg for today, so I already created the repository if you want to start it or bookmark it, and then it should arrive sometime next week, and you can like get a better idea of how this is implemented. And with that, we arrive at the end of the talk, and I'm happy to answer some more questions.
You mentioned there are other plugins like WPL, Polylang, and gTranslate. So how do they work around the lack of a stable ID in Gutenberg?
So how do other WordPress translation plugins work around the issue of not having a stable ID in Gutenberg? The Gutenberg blocks do, like, they are somehow stored in the MySQL database, so they do internally have an ID, but there are no plans to expose them. Now, as a WordPress plugin, that's not that much of an issue if you know where to look. So what these translations plugins do is they hook directly into the WordPress database to identify these blocks. But that wasn't an option for us because we're not too deeply involved in WordPress plugin development.
I'm not sure if we understood the challenge with unique IDs. If there is a web page to translate, it has a unique ID with the URL. And inside the URL, there will be a set of content. And the risk of having two times the exact same string with different translation doesn't look like so high to me. So there's something obvious in the way. Why do you need unique IDs? This part I did not understand.
So the question is, or it's starting with a statement, like you can uniquely identify a web page by its URL, or in this case, its WordPress page name or path. And then it's unlikely that like two times the same text on the same page would have a different translation. So that's not the the issue I wanted to get to. The problem is like you have like the original English version as your reference, right? And then someone might to change a word, but the meaning doesn't change, or you might like change punctuation, change a typo, etc. Now the string of that string, the hash of that string changes. So it's an entirely new message inside of the JSON export. Now, as I mentioned, in WebLate, you have this thing for translation memory. So you can still say up to a certain similarity that should like automatically assign a translation. That, of course, helps working around that. But we also don't want to put the threshold too low for translation memory. Like if we have very similar sentences that actually mean a bit different because of like one word changed, and we don't want to automatically assign the translation of a similar string to it. Now with the unique ID on directly the widget that has the content, we can say this is the same content widget even if like one word inside of it changed. So it's probably okay that translation is unchanged, but still our translators are notified this, like the string has a changed original message, please double check it if the translation is still correct.
Okay, thank you.
it means the content is changing a lot, or the otherwise if the
not a lot.
If the content is very stable.
The question is, if the content is stable, do you still need this? Probably not, but it's easier to work with. Like if you say I'm translating the HTML page in one go and then it never changes, that's probably fine depending on what you do. If you never, like if you're absolutely sure you're never going to edit this in the next 2 years, then yeah, sure, that works.
Going back is HTTPS empty.
As I said, this repository is currently empty. I'm going to upload it next week. Then, thank you again a lot for listening and having me today.